Penguin Random House Audio presents Keep Saying Their Names by Simon Stranger. Translated from the Norwegian by Matt Bagley. Read for you by Eduardo Ballerini. A. A for accusation. A for arrest. A for all that will disappear and slide into oblivion. All our memories and feelings. All our property and possessions. All that makes up the framework of a life. The chairs one used to sit in, and the bed one used to sleep in, will be carried out and placed in a new home. Our plates will be laid out on the table by new hands, and the glasses raised to someone else's lips, who will sip the water or the wine before resuming their conversation. Items once loaded with history will lose all their meaning and be transformed to mere shapes, like a piano might appear to a deer or a beetle. One day, it will happen. One day will be the last for all of us, none of us knowing when or how. According to Jewish tradition, everyone dies twice. The first time is when the heart stops beating and the synapses in the brain shut down, like a city during a blackout. The second time is when the name of the deceased is mentioned, read, or thought of for the last time, 50 or 100 or 400 years later. Only then is that person really gone, erased from this world. This second death was what made the German artist Gunther Demnig start casting cobblestones in brass, engraving them with the names of Jews murdered by the Nazis during the Second World War, and embedding them in the pavement outside the houses where they once lived. He calls them Stolpersteine. They are an attempt to postpone the second death by documenting the names of the deceased so that passers-by will look down in decades to come and read them, and in doing so keep them alive, while ensuring that the memory of one of the worst chapters in Europe's history is also kept alive, as visible scars on the face of the city. So far, 67,000 Stolpersteine have been laid throughout Europe. One of them is yours. One of these stones has your name on it and is planted in the pavement outside the apartment where you once lived in the central Norwegian city of Trondheim. A few years ago, my son knelt beside this Stolperstein, brushed away the pebbles and sand with his mitten, and read aloud, "Here lived Hirsch Kommissar." My son turned 10 that year, and is one of your great-great-grandchildren, as is my daughter, who was only 6 years old that spring. My wife, Rika, stood beside me. Also in this circle of people was my mother-in-law, Greta, and her husband, Steiner, all of us gathered as though for the burial of an urn. "Yes, he was my grandfather," said Greta. "He lived right here, on the second floor," she went on, turning to the building behind us, to the windows where you once stood looking out, in another age, when people other than ourselves were alive. I knelt down, and my daughter hung her arms round my neck, while my son continued reading the bare facts etched into the cobblestone. "Here lived Hirsch Kommissar, born 1887, arrested January 12, 1942, Falsta, killed October 7, 1942. Greta said something about the surprise invasion, recounting the story of how her father had seen the soldiers on the morning of April 9, 1940. Rika stood up to join the conversation, and my daughter slid off my back and nestled up to her. Only my son and I continued looking down at the brass plate on the pavement. His fingers stroked over the last line, then he looked up. "Why was he killed, Dad?" he asked. "Because he was Jewish," I replied. "Yes, but why?" From the corner of my eye, I noticed Rika looking at me, following both conversations simultaneously. "Well, the Nazis wanted to kill anyone who was different." My son became quiet. "Are we Jewish too?" he asked. His brown eyes were clear and concentrated. I blinked a few times, trying to recall what he knew about the family's history. What did my children know about being Jewish and about our ancestry? We must have talked about how their great-great-grandparents on their mother's side had emigrated from various parts of Russia more than 100 years ago. I knew we had talked about the war, about their great-grandfather Gerson, whom they had both gotten to know before he died, and his escape to Sweden. Rika drew breath to say something, but then fell back into the conversation with Greta, and my eyes locked with my son's. "You're Norwegian," I replied. But I felt there was an element of deceit in my answer, and noticed Rika looking at me again. "And a part of you is Jewish, but we're not religious," I said as I stood up, hoping that Rika or Greta would say something too, that they would have a better answer than me. But their conversation had already leapt ahead, following the logic of association, and was now somewhere else entirely. We went on our way, but my son's question stuck with me. "Why was he killed, Dad?" Shortly after, I started browsing through various archives, and before long, some of the pieces became more visible. Soon I could picture the snow in the center of Trondheim, and the steam from people's breath as they passed the small, crooked wooden houses. And soon I was able to see how the end of your life began, on a day like any other. It is Monday, January 12, 1942. You are standing behind the counter of the fashion boutique that you and your wife own in Trondheim, surrounded by hats on stands and mannequins wearing coats and dresses. You have just welcomed your first customer of the day and told her about this week's special offers, when you have to put down your cigarette and the order form to pick up the phone. "Paris Vienna, can I help you?" you say automatically, as you have done thousands of times before. "Guten Morgen," says a man on the other end of the line, who continues in German. "Am I talking to Kommissar?" "Yes, that's correct," you reply, also in German, thinking momentarily that it might be one of your suppliers from Hamburg calling, perhaps because of a problem at customs again. Maybe it is the summer dresses you ordered, but in that case, it must be a new employee, because this voice does not sound familiar. "Herr Kommissar? Married to Marie Kommissar?" "Yes. Who am I speaking to?" "I am calling from the Gestapo Security Service." "Okay." You glance up from the order form, aware that your customer can sense there is something going on. You place your cigarette on the edge of the ashtray again and turn your face toward the wall while your heart pounds in your chest. "The Gestapo? There is a matter we would like to discuss with you," says the man in a low voice. "Very well," you reply apprehensively, and are just about to open your mouth to ask what that is when you are interrupted. "Please come in for questioning at the Mission Hotel, today at 2 p.m., says the voice at the end of the line. "Mission Hotel? For questioning? Why on earth are you being called in for questioning?" you think, with your face still turned to the wall. Could it have something to do with Marie's brother David and his communist views? The spike from a headless nail pokes out from the doorframe. You hold your thumb against the metal, pressing the point into your skin while closing your eyes. "Allo?" says the voice at the other end in an impatient tone. "Are you there?" "Yes, I am here," you reply, lifting your thumb from the spike and looking at the white spot where the blood has been pressed away from the flesh. "Some of my colleagues think I'm taking too much of a risk calling you like this," the man says. There is the sound of a cigarette lighter being lit right next to the mouthpiece. "They think I should have sent a car and brought you in right away, so that you don't just take your sons and disappear. After all, you are Jews," continues the voice, emphasizing the last word, then continuing in a more hushed tone, almost confidingly, "but I know that your wife Marie has been admitted to the hospital. A fall on the ice, wasn't it?" "Yes, that's correct. She slipped and fell on the ice a few days ago and fractured a bone in her hip," you reply, unable to remember the German word for femur, not quite sure if you've ever known it. You make your point anyway. "How could Marie be so stupid?"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?